Today's sermon will be from Genesis chapter 15. We're going to be talking about the Abrahamic covenant. We're also going to look at some of the other passages where Abraham has promises made to him by God, including from chapter 17, chapter 13, and chapter 12. We skipped over a little bit of that before, but we're going to come back to it now. So in this passage, we are going to read about the promises which God made to Abraham, and we are going to read about how he has sworn by himself that those promises will come true, and we're going to dip our toe just a little bit into what those promises mean for us today. So first off, what are the promises of the covenant which God made with Abraham? First off, divine protection. In Genesis chapter 15, verse 1, God says, "Fear not, Abram, I am your shield." So God is promising Abram that he's going to give him protection as his shield, and so Abram need not fear. This goes along very nicely with what he said in chapter 12 at verse 3, which is, "I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse." Obviously, God is on Abraham's side and is giving him protection. He also promises him a great reward. Now, what reward is he going to give him? First off, in chapter 15, verse 4, he says, "Your very own son shall be your heir." Now, Abraham has protested that Eleazar of Damascus, a man who simply works in his household, who is not his own offspring, will become his heir. But God says, "Incorrect, you are going to have offspring, you have no children yet, but your own son will be your heir." Not only this, but God swears that Abraham will have offspring as numerous as the stars in chapter 15, verse 5. This is comparable to his promise in chapter 13, verse 16. Where he has sworn that Abraham will have children like the dust of the earth. And in chapter 17, verse 4, he says that Abraham will be the father of a multitude of nations. Now, that of course, is after the birth of Ishmael. So we have Ishmael and Isaac, who will be his sons at that point. There will be more than one nation, and that's the occasion for the name change to Abraham, that he will become the father of a multitude of nations. That's what Abraham means. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to Ishmael. He also promises to Abraham that he will possess the land of Canaan, or at least his descendants will. The descendants specifically are the sons of Isaac, who are promised everlasting possession of Canaan. And similar promises are made in chapter 13, verses 14 through 15. Chapter 15, verse 7, verse 18, and chapter 17, verse 9. So the promise to Abraham for his great reward is largely that he will have many children and that they will possess the land of Canaan. But he has also promised to him a special relationship with God among his progeny. As he said, "I will establish my covenant between me and you and your offspring after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and to your offspring after you." So obviously there is going to be a special relationship between the offspring of Abraham and with God. And not only that, but as we have discussed before in Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, "In Abraham all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So this is the nature of the Abrahamic covenant. It is a land promise. It is a promise that Abraham will have many children, that they will have a special relationship with God, and that ultimately all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And of course we know that is through the new covenant, through the Messiah coming, and through our faith, which we will discuss a little bit more as we go on here and have discussed elsewhere. Now, the ratification of the Abrahamic covenant is a very interesting thing. It is something that we would read today and be very confused by it because we don't have the ancient context which the original readers of this text had. So let me go ahead and read what happened. And I'm going to start at chapter 15 and go through verses 8 through 11. And we're reading in the ESV today. But he said, O Lord God, how am I to know that I shall possess it? He said to him, Bring me a heifer 3 years old, a female goat 3 years old, a ram 3 years old, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he brought him all these, cut them in half, and laid each half over against the other. But he did not cut the birds in half. And when birds of prey came down on the carcasses, Abram drove them away. We're going to skip down to verse 17. When the sun had gone down and it was dark, behold, a smoking fire pot and a flaming torch passed between these pieces. On that day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, To your offspring I give this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates, the land of the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. So what happened there? God gives Abram a grocery list of animals to bring back. He cuts them in half. He leaves their pieces lying on the ground. And then at night, a magical torch and fire pot go floating between the pieces, or at least passing between the pieces. I presume they were floating. And that sounds wildly confusing to modern ears. I recall being a young man trying to read through the book of Genesis and giving up at this point in complete confusion. So let's try to make this simple. This is the way to sign a contract with God. Now, in those days, people did not sign contracts. The reason we sign a contract today is because we want everyone to know what the terms of our agreements are, and we have courts that look over the contracts and determine that everyone agreed to this or that and decide what's going to happen in the event that there is a conflict. But there were no courts in those days. And so what people would do is when they were making a covenant, they would swear maledictory oaths, meaning saying evil things about themselves in an oath. So for example, they might say something like, May God cut me in half if I don't fulfill my oath. Okay? Now this was taking the Lord's name. They would swear in the name of Jehovah. And of course we know that it is a great sin to take the Lord's name in vain. That means that swearing a covenant in God's name and then not fulfilling it. Okay, so it's important to not take God's name in vain and to fulfill our covenants. And at this time, all the parties involved believed in God, and this was sufficient for their contract because they were all afraid that God would come down and cut them in half if they took the Lord's name in vain and failed to follow the contract. So they're going to say, I will do such and such, and if I don't do such and such, may God cut me in half or do some other horrible thing to me. And that is how their oaths were sworn. You'll read throughout the scriptures, you'll hear of people saying, may God do so to me and more also. Okay, that is how you swear a maledictory oath. They're saying, may God do so to me as I have done to these animals. Now, there are no animals yet in our example, but for a major covenant like this, the parties would put some skin into the game. So they would show that they were serious, and in order to show that they were serious about what they were saying, they would make a sacrifice to God of an expensive animal, they would cut it in half, and then the parties to the contract would walk between the pieces of the animal as a public visual display and also a reminder to them that they would also be cut to pieces like the animal if they failed to uphold their end of the bargain. Okay? So this is what they're doing. They're bringing the animal, they cut it in half, they walk between the parts and say, may God do so to me and more also if I fail to uphold this covenant. Or, you know, they would say Jehovah, may Jehovah do to me and more also, using his name. And of course, they're not going to take his name in vain. They don't want to be cut to pieces like these halves of an animal. So this is how covenants were sworn. This is how contracts were made. This is, so when we're looking at what's happening with Abraham, this is God making a covenant, a contract with Abraham. Now, we have an example confirming our idea of what happened with these covenants in Jeremiah 34, verses 18 through 19. I'll read that to you. This is God. He is speaking about the destruction of Jerusalem and the people therein because they have violated their covenants. And he says, "And the men who transgressed my covenant and did not keep the terms of the covenant that they made before me, I will make them like the calf that they cut in two and passed between its parts. The officials of Judah, the officials of Jerusalem, the eunuchs, the priests, and all the people of the land who passed between the parts of the calf." So again, these people would cut a calf in half, they would walk between its parts, they would make the covenant. And God says in this passage, hey, these people haven't been keeping their covenants. They've transgressed their covenant with me, and they didn't keep the terms of the covenants that they made before me. And so I am going to go ahead and cut them apart like this calf, okay? So, and ultimately that's what happened. You know, there's the Babylonian invasion. People are, in fact, cut in half. Very gory, horrible stuff. So, in this passage, God is making a contract with Abraham. But there's a very interesting component to this contract, which is that God swears with himself. You will note in reading the passage that Abram doesn't pass between the pieces of the animals. Instead, God passes through twice. So God is on both ends of this covenant. Abram says, "How do I know that you're going to do this?" And God says, "I am going to swear it by myself to myself." So first, a smoking fire pot goes through. That's pass number one. And then a torch goes through. That's pass number two. So God is swearing a self-maledictory oath in his own name and to himself that he will fulfill his covenant with Abraham. And he requires nothing of Abraham in return. There's no Abraham, you must do this in chapter 15. There's nothing required of Abraham. And if Abraham fails to do whatever that nothing is, there's no penalty to him. There's no punishment because he's not the one walking between the pieces of the calf. The only penalty rests on God. So regardless of what Abraham does, God has declared that he will either fulfill the terms of this covenant or destroy himself, period. And by the way, God is not going to destroy himself. God is going to fulfill the terms of the covenant. Now, Abraham, or Abram, as he is at this point, he believed Jehovah, and it was counted to him as righteousness, tells us verse 6 of chapter 15. Now, this, of course, is an important verse and an important principle to get. If you want to read more about it, I recommend that you read Romans chapter 4. We're going to touch our toe into it here. But it tells us that Abraham was not justified by his works. Remember, Abraham didn't do anything. He was justified by his simple belief. God required nothing of Abraham to fulfill this covenant. Even circumcision. Circumcision is going to be the sign of the covenant. We read about that in chapter 17. Remember, we're not there. We're at chapter 15 still. But the passage makes clear that circumcision came after the promise was made and after the covenant was ratified, and circumcision is simply a sign of the promises. It's not a requirement for fulfilling them. And of course, that's important because circumcision was a hot topic of discussion at the time when Romans was written. And we're going to talk about circumcision, by the way, in a different sermon. So I know that you're excited about that, but you're going to have to be patient. Now, Abraham, Romans chapter 4 tells us, is not only the father of his literal children, he is, quote, the father of all who believe without being circumcised, so that righteousness would be counted to them as well. In the eyes of God, concerning our ultimate salvation, righteousness will never be attained by good works or by keeping the laws. The covenant of righteousness has always been extended to anyone who will believe in God's promise. Period. So that's what's so important here about this Abrahamic covenant. God doesn't swear that he's going to save us if we do something. God has sworn that he'll save those who believe on his son Jesus, regardless of whether or not they do anything to affect their salvation. Now, we know that people who believe will do good things, right? We know that people who believe will do good things, just like Abraham, having believed, is going to circumcise his children. Just like Abraham, when he believed, got up and left the land that he was born in and went to Canaan. So good works will accompany our faith, but they will never, ever be effective at bringing about our salvation. Our salvation rests on God and God's promises. Now, we skipped a couple of verses there in chapter 15, from 12 through 16 are the verses. And these are some foreshadowing. It is a prophecy from God to Abraham about what's going to happen to Abraham's descendants in the first few generations. Now, we understand that the terms of the covenant that God made with Abraham have been fulfilled by our time, but at the time when this was written, the terms of the covenant had not been fulfilled. The people had not yet taken the promised land. So at the time that this was written, it would have been a major encouragement to the people who were preparing to do that, to take the promised land. So in these verses, we read that there is a prediction that God's people will go into slavery in Egypt, and that ultimately they will be afflicted for hundreds of years, that they will come out of their slavery while the nation which has enslaved them is greatly punished, that they will bring out great wealth with them, and then ultimately, of course, they will have the land. So this would be a great encouragement to the people of Israel as they were coming out of bondage, and that, of course, is the context in which the book was written. So this passage, while it might be very confusing to a modern reader, was an enormous encouragement to the people who originally received it, that God had sworn by himself to give them victory, to give them freedom from slavery, and to ultimately give them this conquest of the promised land. And it ought to be a great encouragement to us today as well, as we understand that God's mercy comes to us not by our works, but by our faith.